This is The Weekly. We're here again. Couple of things. My conspiracies are all congealing. So you may have noticed the board in the back with the red thread.
I have not, but I will be sure to check it out now.
So I've been mentioning a lot of financial shenanigans and legal situations. Well, it's all coming together this week.
Okay.
Because there's rumor that Hasbro is prepping D&D for sale.
Really?
Yes. So it's just a rumor, but it'll be fun to talk about. And it kind of combines everything we've talked about in the past few weeks.
Interesting. Hadn't heard that. Okay.
Yeah. And also The Well RPG is on Kickstarter, and it looked really interesting. And it doesn't end until the end of December, so we got a little bit of time to get this up.
In other words, we can talk about it and still have it be live by the time this goes up. All right. Cool.
Exactly. And a little bit of a discussion about alignment.
Ooh, okay. Week.
Yeah.
Toss it out. Discussion. Okay. Anyway. Right.
Yes, yes. So let's start with The Well. The Well RPG is a new Kickstarter, and so it's an original tabletop setting and system. So the setting is Bastion, the Last City.
Okay.
And the dungeon, or where people will be adventuring, is The Well. So this infinitely deep, dark tunnel that just goes straight into the land. And the characters are grave diggers.
Okay.
So I guess they could have called them grave robbers, but because they're probably working for the city, it's grave diggers. They're kind of morally correcting it a little bit.
Well, you might get to it, but I also wonder if it's because the idea of doing Indiana Jones style, let's take these other people's stuff and put it in a museum, is becoming unpalatable.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Grave robber implies you're going to take things that aren't yours.
Right.
Grave digger just means we're going to keep on digging, right?
Yes, yes.
Interesting.
So for grave diggers, life is different. People look at you askance. Oh, I don't know. It's great. People look at you askance, possibly because of your habituation. Jeez, the vocabulary is killing me here. Your habituation to violence and your growing collection of scars. That might be why you spend a lot of your time in the Broken Shovel, a bar on Bastion. Your adventurers are grave diggers, and basically the enemies or the well is populated with the
undead.
Yes, the animated dead, as they call them. So the thing that they are pushing pretty hard about this game is fast character creation. So the character creation sheet actually has checkboxes.
Okay.
So you kind of choose things, you know, similar to like a Monster Hearts or something. You're either checking something or crossing something out that describes you. And it's a six-sided D6 system, six-sided dice. Yeah, you're meeting or exceeding a target number.
Mm. When you first said the well, I was wondering if the dice mechanic was going to be like a die pool.
Mm.
Because I've seen other games called like pool or whatever, and I'm like, oh, pool is kind of like well. It would make sense to be a dice pool system.
Yeah, well, the little bit different. The system sounds interesting. It was something that I actually was thinking about, like, why don't people do this or why hasn't this been done? You start your turn with two dice in your actions, and each of those dice represent a separate action. So they can be rolled together. So you could use both, you can save both, or most commonly use one and save one for later. So I like the action economy also being a dice economy. So you have a number of dice and you spend them, and you can also get extra dice for assisted action or higher chance of success.
Right.
And I like the idea that if a real dangerous situation and you have, you know, three or four dice to roll, you can roll them all to all but guarantee, that you're going to get past.
Yeah, so it's a resource that increases your chance of success, or you can kind of like, you know, lessen your chance of success to do more, attempt to do more things.
Yes, right. The roll of a one means a, you know, complication or bad thing, like a failure. And also they talk about gambits. So gambits are what give you extra dice.
Okay.
Throwing your shield at the enemy as a distraction or different unexpected player choices will give you a chance to roll an extra die. If you're going to do something that's kind of work in your disadvantage, you'll get an extra ability as a gambit.
I'll have to go check this out because it does seem interesting. And the setting actually seems kind of interesting too. I like, for some games, I like things that have a pretty narrow focus. And it's like, hey, here's the last city. You're all gravediggers.
Yes.
We're all on the same page about this game, right? So you can kind of shortcut, not shortcut a session zero, but it kind of like primes everybody for the type of game you will be playing.
Mm-hmm.
And if this doesn't fit what you want to play, wait until the next game, right?
right. Yeah, that's true.
What I'm wondering about is these gambits. I have mixed feelings about mechanical resources for doing, quote, cool things, especially when it's the GM's decision to decide whether those things were cool enough to earn the mechanical bonus.
Right.
I much prefer games or systems that kind of have a mechanical trigger to award those things than it being, everyone think that was cool,
right?
Okay, give me my die, right? Which, I mean, that totally works for some groups, and getting group consensus absolutely works. I found for me, it's one more thing as a GM I have to worry about. And just so it says right here in the rules, when I roll a 6, I can extra die. I kind of prefer those.
I think it's similar. It sounds like the gambits are similar to trophy, like what you risk in trophy. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because you'll – and actually, I misread that. The thing that you say would go wrong or the thing that's going to complicate the situation doesn't happen unless you roll a 1.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah,
okay.
So you get that extra die, and if you don't roll any 1s, then that thing doesn't happen, and you had an extra chance of success.
As opposed to trophy, where the thing you say, bad thing you say happens to get the die – happens regardless of what you roll on the die. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so it sounds interesting. And it said, ideal for modern play groups. A setup is quick, character generation is quick, so you can get into the action as soon as possible, which I think is good for time-limited, more modern groups. And so the designer, Peter Schaefer, has done a lot of freelance for White Wolf, Onyx Path, Green Ronin, and was a full-time employee of Wizards of the Coast. Yeah. And I think it's probably worth checking out. And he also does a nice job. Some really great Kurt Komodo and Chris Walton do a lot of the art for. And it's great. It's very thematic and very immersive. The art is all, black and white line art and stuff. So it really evokes that, undead grave robbing or grave digging.
Yes, grave digging.
Situation.
I'll have to go check this out. I'm wondering how grimdark does it seem? Because just kind of throwaway thought last night scrolling through Twitter and seeing other kind of OSR adjacent stuff. I think I'm personally am getting a little tired of the everything shit, the world is shit, so are you setting.
I
get it can be cathartic and not everybody has to be like a gleaming hero, but that's trend is kind of starting to wear on me a bit.
Yeah, that's true. And I think in if Grimdark is done in replacement for an actual interesting setting, if you're just going to call it dark and we're all it's all terrible and it's the end of the world, and I think there's good ways to do it, because something like Forbidden Lands is literally like a post-apocalyptic fantasy, which doesn't really read as grimdark. It reads as post-apocalypse, so I like that feeling a little bit more. So the survival mechanics feel more gritty and things. It's not just there's really bad bad people and we're not so good ourselves.
It's like, what color gray are you? Rather than,
Right. All right. So let's move on to the conspiracy. So this is a rumor, a kind of a prediction that was posted on ICV2, which is Rolling Initiative, I guess, is the writer who also has a bit like a business degree. So this is not like a completely uneducated guess. Right. A few things kind of lined up and a few things we've been talking about that are making this person suspect that Hasbro doesn't like D&D, maybe never liked D&D, and would like to get rid of both Magic and Dungeons & Dragons.
Okay, I do not have a business degree. The sense, recently kind of getting back into Magic mildly, I still get the sense that Magic is a, maybe not, but the sense I get is Magic is a decent cash cow for Hasbro. So them wanting to get rid of it, I would am curious about why that's a theory.
Right. The initial purchase of Wizards of the Coast by Hasbro was for Pokemon. So that happened because they wanted that property, because they wanted to produce toys, they wanted to support that whole universe. Nintendo took the license back, and it's being those games are produced, I think, by Game Freak or whoever does that, the actual, or like maybe there's a Pokemon or LLC that does that. So their main motivation for Wizards was that big property, access to that big Nintendo
property. Which they don't have anymore.
That being the initial interest in it, and seeing that now they're left with Dungeons and Dragons and Magic, and the recent, like we saw with HeroQuest, the recent kind of shifts that they're making to push Avalon Hill forward as their board game label, like to kind of bring them close and brand a lot of their board games, kind of going around or over or away from Wizards in any, because fantasy, Wizards of the Coast and fantasy for HeroQuest would have made sense as branding, but it's branded Avalon Hill.
Oh, is it? I hadn't noticed that.
That was a little, that was an interesting difference. And so people are seeing that. And even that Adventure Begins D&D board game is branded Hasbro. It's not branded. It may be co-branded Wizards, but it's also branded Hasbro, which they haven't done with previous board games. So this plus the two lawsuits. So we've talked about the Dragonlance and then also the Gale Force 9 that are just Wizards stopping payment, or maybe Hasbro telling Wizards to stop payment. Right. I think basically it seems like with the Dragonlance lawsuit, it's like, we're going to sue you for $10 million. You're probably going to settle this, but this is our starting price that we're going to negotiate from. So we're talking 7 figures if you want to buy us out of, this contract. it really looked like that. Yeah. So these two recent like stopping payment, saying they're not violating the contract, but things aren't moving forward, made this person rather suspicious. So if Hasbro wants to shop the company around, it would be much easier without these outstanding contracts from WotC. So to pay them off, get rid of them, and just, you know, terminate those two kind of commitments.
That's what I was wondering, because like, okay, those two lawsuits come up. Who would want to buy Wizards of the Coast with those two outstanding things? So it's going to be like, okay, the assumption is that either Hasbro or WotC is going to have to, what, like pay those off so they disappear, and then WotC will be more appealing to potential buyers.
The writer pointed out that the final sign, or the thing that will really let people know that something is going on with especially the D&D brand, is, or with Wizards, is if WizKids loses their contract, because they're producing the pre-painted miniatures. Right. And so if that goes away, then it looks like they're trying to make Wizards as portable as possible.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but the things that kind of go against this, I mean, that's a really fun, and if you play this out, the fun part of this is, okay, there's nobody rich enough to buy them, so it might be like an equity management or one of those, you know, investment firms that seizes them, breaks it up even further, repackages it, and sells it. And so, in the funniest of all realities, Paizo buys Dungeons and Dragons.
I didn't see that through line, but I,
So that would be.
I wonder if they would though.
I don't know, because they've spent so much time distinguishing their IP. Yeah. Right. I mean,
it's the same fucking game, but whatever. Like, I was wondering what you would break WotC up into. Actually, I don't know anything about the video games, and I don't think they own any video games. They probably just license.
Right. Right.
The D&D IP, which is what, I don't know, to video game developers. So you have what, Magic and D&D?
Right.
Unless WotC has other stuff. I don't think you could break it up any farther than that.
No, I don't think so, yeah.
And I think when I was putting together our, who knows when we're going to do it, random card cube draft, I looked at a chronological list of all the Magic sets. And they had, or whatever site I looked at, had future ones that had been either like, you know, teased or information was out. And it looked like there was some kind of boxed set or something where Magic cards, it actually said, like the set said, Dungeons and Dragons, whatever something, where it's like, here's a set that is going to be set in, I can't even remember the main part of the Forgotten Realms because it's so fucking boring. Sorry to all the listeners who like D&D, but it really is. It's like bog standard fantasy. Anyway, I think there was going to be something like really heavily connected to D&D in a Magic set, because we had already seen the release of...
Was it Ravnica?
The Ravnica source book for... Or Ravnica. I forgot how to say it.
I'm sure it's...
Yeah. Which I'm actually interested in looking at, but not $50 hardback looking at.
Well, I'm sure there's some good art in it. That's what I
probably sourced from the cards, which is not a knock on the artist at all, because Magic art is generally speaking still pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that was a backhanded compliment. Didn't really mean that. Yeah.
So the things that kind of go against this and kind of dispel this, but it's just fun to speculate, are that the last financial report, Magic the Gathering was incredibly strong for Hasbro, and especially the digital version.
Oh, really?
So the convenience of the digital version, they've just got like millions of players now. It's on every platform, including mobile. So
even video game consoles.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So they're seeing really good performance with that. And this whole year, everyone being kind of, you know, locked down and quarantined and things, digital has been, you know, served them a lot better. So I'm not sure about, you know, D&D's health, but Magic doesn't look like it's going to go anywhere, because it's something reliable. And they don't really have, I mean, they have like digital versions of Monopoly and some of their board games and things, but I don't know if that brings in the same number of players that, and the kind of constant competition that Magic would. Right. I think that would, you know, deck building and everything would really
keep people. It's not like you have to update your Monopoly box every year if you want to stay current with Standard.
That's true.
No, like I had no numbers to back me up, but just kind of that was the sense I got. Magic was not the linchpin, but Magic was still bringing enough where it kind of kept Wizards afloat. And so by extent, Hasbro seeing that money, why would you cut off that revenue stream?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I bought Magic cards for the first time in like 10 years.
Yeah, me too. So it's secondhand, but the money still went to them eventually. Yeah.
It's very funny. It just kind of doesn't go away. It kind of keeps, it's funny they've kept that IP and that game actually going for as long as they have.
I don't particularly like, I'm turning into a Magic podcast. I don't particularly like the collectible nature.
Right.
I don't really like the how expensive some third hand or second hand, you know, cards can get.
Those foil cards. God, those are so annoying.
Alternate full art or full border cards.
Right.
I do think magic, because I followed like the Rosewater design blogs for a long time. I think magic and the magic developers and designers do a fantastic job of constantly finding new areas to explore mechanics-wise while keeping the game pretty much the same for the past 25 years. Yeah, it's like you would think that eventually you would run out of design space. Mm-hmm. And it's like, nope, they kind of keep finding ways to either bring mechanics back or do interesting things with mechanics. Mm-hmm. And so I do, from a mechanical standpoint, I really like Magic, though. The asymmetrical nature of Netrunner was better, only because the last game we played, there were a couple turns where I'm just like, well, didn't draw land. And Netrunner avoided that problem where you were always able to do something
that
felt productive on your turn. And those Hail Mary passes of run R&D, there's my seventh agenda point when, you know, being able to pull those off instead of what feels like the more way Magic set up, where it's like, well, I see where this is going to end up in three turns. Right. You want to call it here?
It gets too inevitable. And that is a really nice thing. And also the asymmetry keeps it fresh when you have two rounds. You're playing offense and defense. So that was nice about Netrunner. But I do think the design of Netrunner was, they were starting to kind of throw things, like there were mechanics and cards that would come up, just kind of knock the game one way or the other. The meta was like very turbulent.
We never really had like a solid meta, because everyone we played with here would just always show up with, hey, I got this new deck I want to try.
Right.
So nothing ever really dominated. But from reading other blogs, it seemed like towards the end of Netrunner's life, things were getting a bit wonky balance-wise.
So that's too bad. Well, someday maybe we'll see a resurrection. Yeah. So if you had to give Hasbro a Dungeons & Dragons alignment, what do you think that would be?
We're talking Hasbro? Give Hasbro an alignment? Just from the fact they're a corporation, lawful evil?
Perfect. So for our discussion, I thought we would talk a little bit about alignment, and mostly because
doesn't go away.
It just keeps, it's persistent. And I think when we went back to play 5e again, or when I tried 5e for the first time, that was the thing that really stuck. The character creation was great. The backgrounds, I liked what they did with 5e. Oh. And then we got to alignment, and I'm like,
this sacred cow that hasn't been killed in however many years. 40?
So I was surprised, because I don't remember that from, you know, earlier days of D&D. I don't remember alignment. And maybe it's just because I've changed my thinking as a little more nuanced and gray. And it was easier just to say, we're good guys I'm a bad guy.
When you were younger. Back in the day, the alignment was what, like, good, neutral, and evil, wasn't it? You only had like that one axis.
And this was kind of sparked by Wizards of the Coast posting a alignment quiz. So this was
basically, are you good, evil, or neutral?
Right. So it's like a Cosmo quiz, you know, for your D&D character. That's so you're hilarious. You're supposed to take this. So it's a test to decide your character's alignment. So you read through this test and answer the questions as you would be role-playing your character. So then at the end of this, it'll tell you
Is there a bit about turning a turtle back over on its back?
Probably.
Oh, no, that's a test if you're a replicant. Sorry.
That's right. You see a magazine. That's right. Have you ever taken this test yourself, Hasbro, or was it the guest?
I'm going to have to go take this now.
Yeah. So I'm curious, about how the outcome. It's quite a few questions. It's like one of those, like, you know, trying to get a retail job in a warehouse. And like, how do you think stealing is okay? Never okay? Always okay? But it's a little dated. It came out in 2000. So I think some of the questions might read a little rough or not quite have the sensitivity that they could. Because there's questions about, you know, family, relationships of friends and family, romance.
Is the option community. I have no family. They were all like killed in a fire or something. Right. That's the classic.
Lone wolf. What are your thoughts about alignment and the kind of nine box system?
Like, well, biggest thought is like, I think there are better ways to describe character motivation. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of like a holdover from a previous era of the game that people have kind of moved beyond. Mm. It ends up being problematic. I think when you have like universe wide, sort of concrete points of X is good, Y is evil, this is chaotic, and this is order. Mm-hmm. If you have like those universal truths in the setting, that kind of becomes problematic, especially when you tie certain races.
Yes.
They say, they tend to be whatever. I think it probably came out of the idea that D&D characters are heroes and mm-hmm. heroes need villains to fight against.
Right.
And it's a lot more palatable to say, oh, we're the good guys.
Yes, yes.
Because there's some cosmic law that says they're evil. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. it's okay to go beat them up and take their stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And so like the D&D setting, they describe it as the alignment system is a mix of fantasy elements, medieval ideas, and epic myth as seen through modern eyes. So trying to kind of get those ideas, some of those older ideas and quantify it in this D&D world. But when you're all just like looking for loot in in the underground, like who is good exactly?
Yeah.
And they also talk about like, you know, even lawful good, like you wouldn't consider a paladin to have to be lawful good because his devotion isn't to this great ideal. It's to the church and to the following, to his order and to chivalry.
Right.
So it's like more of a knightly order. So that doesn't even really fit in the alignment scale.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a bit more useful mm-hmm. when it's not tied to some kind of cosmic truth.
Yes.
Because if there's a cosmic truth of this is what constitutes lawful good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, okay, it's real easy to decide your alignment because do you do these things? No. And if then you kind of get to generalize, okay, lawful good means you try to follow the rules and you try and do what's best for everybody,
mm-hmm.
then that's easier to understand why the character considers themselves lawful good, even if they're doing other stuff,
right?
Or why the character considers himself chaotic. Mm-hmm. Evil. It's a bit more like, I was going to think like the five colors in magic. They kind of have, you know, things they are about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which I guess are cosmic truths. So that analogy doesn't work at all. Just ignore that bit, right? But I mean, you kind of have the idea of, like you brought up the paladin, kind of the classic asshole
mm-hmm.
character who like won't do things
right.
or is constantly reminding everybody to be good. Mm-hmm. It's like, why are you adventuring with us again? Okay, as the player comic relief, okay, that totally works as long as everyone else at the table wants to do it.
Right.
But I guess that leads to the other kind of potential issue of players acting like dicks at the table mm-hmm. because it's what their character would do
because
of their alignment, right? Like the chaotic evil rogue stealing from everybody in the party
mm-hmm.
because, oh, I'm just playing my character, right? Or it's the chaotic neutral sorcerer just firing fireballs off like randomly every which way because, oh, I'm wacky, I'm chaotic neutral, you know?
Right,
which, that's not fun.
Yeah, right. And it's not a great guideline for role playing. I mean, I think if that's initially what it was supposed to be, I don't think it works well. And there's much better systems and much better thinking and more modern role play. And even in some of the OSR, I think they've kind of gotten rid of a lot of that to make it work better.
You kind of have to since everything's dark and shitty and we're just...
Yeah.
Not to make money for ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think when we talk about an alternative, like Warhammer Fantasy, mm-hmm. I think does that a bit better because it's basically order and chaos,
right. You
know, so it's not really morally judging things. It's just like, we want to hold shit together. We want to tear shit apart.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like those two opposing forces. And the fact that alignment isn't kind of a dynamic or a changing thing, like your behaviors or what you do, how you play that character could actually change their alignment and could have a DM that says, yeah, you're not actually playing lawful good. So we're going to, you know, change that.
Back in the day was like, you're not actually playing lawful good. So here's that 10% experience penalty. You don't get any of your daily spells because your god is angry with you.
Uh-huh.
And did I mention that I'm a real vindictive GM? Yeah. I think that's what it was back in the day.
Yeah.
It was a stick
to
basically
right.
force players to play their characters a certain way.
Right. Yeah, we'll see if they, you know, because they're already abandoning race and they're already kind of changing interracial. Well, I mean, I think they will. I think 6th edition will not probably use that word.
Will there be a 6th edition if it gets sold off?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, in the Tasha's, the new release, you know, they're just kind of racial benefit,
species benefit.
What they're calling, you know, what they're calling kind of the racial traits are going away and actually are just assignable, you know, based on however you want to create the character.
Like, I haven't read Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. Probably won't, because again, I'm not $50 hardback into interested in what's in there.
Right.
But the reason I asked, are they moving away from it, is I will consider it moved away from
mm-hmm.
when it's in the core rule book and part of tournament play.
Right.
Or part of their organized play. Mm-hmm. Unless and until it does that, it's still an optional rule, and mm-hmm. therefore D&D has not moved away from it.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, I think they're just trying to soften in and give people some flexibility. People that were unhappy, they're giving them flexibility. But you're right, that's not taking it out of the player's handbook. Yeah.
D&D is everything.
Yes.
As long as you put in the work.
Right. This might be something, I mean, just kind of getting your head around alignment or figuring out how you want to play that might be a bit daunting for new players, because that was the thing that really stuck out in 5e for me. I was like,
this again. Wasn't picking up spell slots and stuff. Because we played martial characters.
Right.
I'm trying to remember what they did in 4E, because 5E, I feel, was a return to your roots kind of thing, because so many people disliked 4E to the point that Paizo got created. I'm sure I participated in a lot of those what do you want to see in 5E surveys, and I'm sure a lot of people said alignment.
Yeah.
Because to them, and I can understand why, alignment, race class alignment is D&D.
Right. That's true.
So you lose one of those. Do you still have D&D?
Yeah, and it's a big part of the identity of the game too, I think, because you see a lot of blogs and things that say lists of all of the Game of Thrones, you know, character alignments. You know, what alignment would Wolverine be? So that's a real kind of, it's a pop culture presence for D&D. So if they got rid of it, it would change, I think, the identity of the game a little bit, but it just doesn't work that well. I think the character backgrounds in 5E work better as kind of role-playing, you know, motivations, and kind of give the characters better color than chaotic good, you know, would ever do.
Maybe if they moved away from the universal truths and made them more as character outlooks. Or personal outlooks, right. Like I consider myself lawful good because I do this, or but then again, who would kind of, maybe you wouldn't classify yourself as evil. And it kind of gets into this potential discussion of, is alignment something that's actually in the setting, or is it only kind of like a game tool? Like people who we are generally regarded as evil don't normally kind of see themselves as evil, right?
Yeah, that's what the discussion with evil races gets complicated, because they don't consider themselves evil, so they're good. So you're not, but you're not, you know, so it's only this other perspective, you know, if they're looked at as the other. So then it gets complicated with race when it's half elves and half orcs, and so are you half evil?
That's like a whole nother can of worms discussion. With like the evil races and then like the half races and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I think that still alignment is in there somewhere. Yeah,
I'm
and
sure.
it's a weird relative thing, and kind of I'm not sure if there's a good alternative, and if D&D would lose a lot of its identity if they completely eliminated it, because like you're saying, that is the race class alignment.
I'm sure people would disagree, but yeah, as we've discussed numerous times before about what would you do in a movie or what is D&D, I think D&D's identity is mostly mechanics. So I can totally see that losing those mechanics kind of loses the integrity, and I don't mean that in a positive sense, of the D&D identity.
Yeah, that's true. It will become something else, and because there's so much competition and people have explored so many other ways to do tabletop, it might be a little dangerous for them to give that up, because there's a lot of better ways to do it.
That's better or worse for certain groups.
I won't be
judgmental. But again, I think D&D kind of continues to juggernaut along just because at this point it's so entrenched in pop culture that it's basically unassailable, regardless of what the other tabletop role-playing games do.
It's the gateway. Yeah, that's true. So what is on the table?
From last week, the Cortex Prime Handbook, which I've got to enter my digital code to get the digital stuff, and the Triple Ace Games All for One Regime Diabolique French Musketeer Supernatural Horror Mashup.
Nice.
And as I said on Twitter, the reason those are on the table is because, although I still kind of like it, I've largely cooled on the Ubiquity system. I still really like the setting for All for One, and I am in the process of adapting it to Cortex Prime.
Oh, cool. Okay.
In no official capacity whatsoever. This is only a fan emulation. So, yeah.
Nice. So, yeah, is there any, does All for One have any open source or any kind of open game license?
Doubt it, because it would be through the Ubiquity system, where, like, what Ubiquity system was put out through Exile Game Studios, which may or may not be defunct anymore because the website doesn't exist anymore.
Oh.
And Triple Ace Games has both an Ubiquity and a Savage Worlds version of All for One. I think they came out with a second edition of All for One for the Savage Worlds one only recently. Okay. So unless I somehow contacted Triple Ace Games and said, please, 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 and then contacted the people in charge of like Cortex and said, oh, by the way, can I please do this? Like, I am in no position to do anything official.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I was just curious.
Not to throw All for One under the bus, but basically it's just French musketeers with vampires, ghosts, and werewolves, you know, and the idea that Cardinal Richelieu, I think, is some kind of demon.
Oh, nice.
But incognito.
Right.
Yeah. Cortex Prime would probably just be, or I feel would be a better system for swashbuckling, because while there's nothing wrong with Ubiquity, it's kind of one of those, I say everything games, mm-hmm. where the focus seems to be a bit more on simulation of reality, or the specific reality for supernatural horror, mm-hmm. where I would want a game that focuses a bit more on swashbuckling.
Where can people find you?
On Twitter, where I think I'm currently ranting about the $7,000 a year annual ballet scholarship I tossed away back in the day.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. If you'd like to see more or hear more of The Weekly, please visit idleredhands.com. And we've got a YouTube channel and Ooh. Twitch as well. And we were just playing Magic on that Twitch.
Yeah, we were.
that was labeled as Mutant Chronicles.
Oh, it was.
So yeah, the notification confused a lot of people.
Yeah, I got my butt handed to me in that game. Yeah.
Yeah, that green deck is brutal.
Brutal.
But we'll try to do some of that. So there may be some sporadic lunchtime live streams of us doing something in the confines of lunch. Yeah. And what that's all about. That is it for this week. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye.